Hello, my name is Dario Balca, and you're listening to the Allard School of Law Oral History Project. I'd like to begin by acknowledging that UBC's Vancouver Point Grey campus is situated on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people. I'd also like to encourage those listening to this interview from outside this area to acknowledge the traditional owners and caretakers of those lands. Anna Fung QC graduated in the class of 1984 and has gone on to a distinguished career in law as in-house counsel. She has served as the president of the Law Society of British Columbia and the national director of the Canadian Bar Association, and has maintained a commitment to legal education throughout her career. It's June 15th, 2020, and Anna joins me today to discuss her time at law school, as well as the journey her legal education has taken her on in the 36 years since she graduated. Anna, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
No, not at all. Pleasure.
So I understand you completed your undergraduate degree in literature at UBC, and you were considering a career as an interpreter and a translator before deciding to go to law school. Can you tell me about what inspired you to pursue a legal education and a career in that field from that point?
Actually, I used to joke, and it is true, that the reason I went to law school was because I really didn't want to work right away. I was always very good in school, and having done my undergraduate degree in English and French, I thought about three different careers. One was to go into teaching, because my parents were both teachers. The second one was to go and do my MBA degree. Thirdly, to go to law school. And actually, I chose law school because I actually knew that you had to write the LSAT in order to get into law school, but I didn't realize that you had to write the GMAT in order to get into the MBA program. So I was never accepted for the MBA program. And then when I thought about going into teaching, it would have only been a one-year program as opposed to 3 years for law school. So I picked law school because it was longer. And frankly, I decided against actually doing becoming an interpreter or translator because I thought to myself that, you know, I'd much rather use my own words rather than somebody else's, right? Because a translator, you're essentially just, you know, translating.
I know you were at UBC for your undergraduate degree. Was there anything in particular, I'm sure it was convenient, but was there anything in particular that other than that kept you at UBC for law school as opposed to another law school?
Well, you know, I loved living in Vancouver, and I never actually thought of going away for university. And I loved UBC. I mean, it's a beautiful campus. What is there not to like about it, right? And as you mentioned, it's convenient because I got to live at home. So all those factors kind of combined in my mind to UBC being the perfect choice.
Can you tell me a bit about what your law school experience was like and whether you have any fond memories that you can share, or if there were any people that you connected to or faculty or any classes that you took that really stuck with you over the years?
You know, law school, especially when you first enter it, having had no knowledge of lawyers in the past, because nobody in my family was in law. And in fact, in the Chinese culture, lawyers are not terribly highly thought of. And the reason for that is Chinese people believe that, you know, if you're reasonable, you don't need lawyers because you can always sort out your problems, right, yourselves, as opposed to going to a lawyer to air out, you know, whatever grievances you have in public. So when I went to law school, I think my dad, frankly, was a little disappointed that I did not, for instance, pursue a career in medicine. That being said, I loved law school because it's so different from, you know, a bachelor arts degree. Everything was new to me, including the people that you meet, because law school kind of draws from a cross-section of people who've had, you know, their undergraduate degrees, for instance, in commerce, and from the arts faculty, from engineering, you name it, right? So the mix is actually a lot more diverse than what you would find in the same faculty, for instance, like, you know, a faculty of arts, for instance. That being said, I actually met some wonderful people that I'm still very much in touch with. And my best friend, in fact, I met in law school because she had the locker next to me. And we got to know each other, and then we ended up clerking together and then also articling together. And she's been my best friend since, well, I've known her since 1981. In terms of fun things, I loved the experience of being in the trike race. I don't know whether you heard about that, where you basically, you're riding this little tricycle meant for a child, right? And you're being pelted with, you know, stuff like green jello and, you know, wilted vegetables as you try to have this race to get to the finish line ahead of anybody else. That to me was a very, very memorable experience participating in that. In terms of professors and courses, I would say one of the classes that really stood out in my mind as being very different from the other substantive law classes that we had was a professor, J.C. Smith, who taught a feminist theory of the law. And he used to be actually, until he became a professor, he was a preacher and a priest. So he had this wonderful way of, you know, conducting a class, which almost seems like a sermon. He was very inspiring and had a very unique view of what the law is supposed to achieve, right? That's very different than just focusing on case law or procedures or rules and things like that. He really took a broad view of the law as an institution. So that really stuck out in my mind. And in addition, I think in first year, what I really loved was criminal law because the cases were just so interesting. The facts in criminal law are just mind-boggling.
Yeah, that's true. There's always quite a story behind those cases, eh?
Exactly, right? And the things that people do in criminal law, you just shake your head and you wonder, man, like, you know, do people really do that type of thing? And they do.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. It's true.
It's hard to believe. It's like...
You mentioned clerking in your previous answer briefly, and I want to ask you about that because it's something that a lot of students wonder about, I think. As someone who clerked for the BC Court of Appeal, can you tell me a bit about what that experience was like and maybe how your experience at law school prepared you for it?
Oh, you know what? That's a really good question. I actually only got to know about clerking through a upper year student who was maybe in a year ahead of me. And she was the one who told me about clerking because it was not a thing that the law school necessarily promoted at the time. But she mentioned to me that you should consider clerking, right? And I thought to myself, well, you know, what does that really entail? And what she really told me was that, yes, it delays your legal education by another year in the sense that, you know, you're spending another year in articles by serving as a law clerk in the courts. But the experience you gain is invaluable in the sense that you learn, if you have any interest in doing litigation at all, you learn how judges think and you learn what they look for in terms of, you know, the quality of arguments, legal analysis, and what being a good advocate it really requires. So, you know, I put in my application and my grades were good enough that, you know, it got me an interview, and then I was selected to be a law clerk in the Court of Appeal. And it was an amazing experience because it did show me that, you know, judges are, despite, you know, the power that they presumably have over litigants, they are actually just human beings trying to do the best they can and coming up with the right result based on the law, you know, when they adjudicate disputes before them. And that's a good thing to learn because you learn not to be afraid of judges. You learn that they're actually trying to do the best they can, sometimes under very difficult circumstances. And that, I think, is reassuring, you know, for anybody who wants to practice law to know that, right? That judges are not arbitrary. They are not capricious. They are just human beings, as I said, trying to do the best they can, given the limits of the law that they are required to uphold.
Some law students are really, you know, they've looked into this and are, that's really what they want to do, is they want to clerk after school if possible. You mentioned, you know, good grades are obviously one important part of that, but is there any other advice that you'd give those students in particular as they make their way through school?
A lot of it requires research. You have to be good at academic research and legal research in particular, and you have to, frankly, be very thoughtful in terms of making sure that, you know, your quality of analysis when it comes to reasoning and persuasiveness is good enough that you can gain the confidence of the judges that you're clerking for. And obviously your research has to be meticulous, right? And if you don't know something, don't try to, don't pretend. Acknowledge you don't know something and then seek clarity, right? Before you make assumptions and try to, try to tell judges something that is wrong. That's one thing that you really have to be totally impeccable in terms of your integrity and ability to acknowledge when you're not certain about something, right? And to be scrupulously fair in how you present the law, because as you know, law is open to interpretation. And if you're putting a spin on it and you're bringing your own kind of interpretation to an issue that doesn't warrant it, then that can do a lot of damage, and it will make the judges not trust you, because you have to be very impartial in how you portray, both sides of a legal issue.
I also wanted to ask you about your experience as both a solicitor and a litigator. Again, I think this is something a lot of law students wonder about and feel like they might have to choose between. So I was wondering if you can tell me a little bit about why you ended up doing both, what striking that balance is like, and maybe what you've gained from sort of living in both worlds a little bit.
Yeah, that's a very difficult choice that people have to make. Sometimes the choice, though, is made easier because simply of personality or your preference, right? No, not everyone wants to appear before a judge and be subject to scrutiny and examination and questioning, right? So some people just by nature would prefer to work behind the scenes and solve, legal problems collaboratively and cooperatively, with the other side. And that's what solicitors generally try to do, because solicitors tend to focus on how can I make things happen, whereas sometimes litigators tend to take an adversarial position on behalf of their clients and then like the drama and the kind of tension from appearing in court, right, arguing against some other lawyer. But if you're one of those people that I think actually like to do both, I think your ability to do that is probably better in a smaller firm than in a big firm, because in a big firm, the value of lawyers in a big firm is that they get to be specialists. They get to be experts in their field, right? And that's how you get to be efficient. That's how you gain clients' trust, because you are the expert in a particular field. In a smaller firm, what you have to be a generalist, because you have to be kind of be able to, wear both hats. But in a big firm, it's hard for you to be both a solicitor and a litigator, because people like to peg you as one or the other, and not really allow you to cross over as much. So, but in my case, I always thought I wanted to be a litigator, but circumstances were such that when I was kept on at my auditing firm at Davis and Company, the economy was such at the time that they really, need me to be a solicitor. And one of the lawyers who took me under his wing was a solicitor, and he essentially persuaded the firm to keep me on because he wanted to mentor me and get me to work on his files, right? But he also recognized that I wanted to do some litigation, and he allowed me the opportunity to do that. So I was able to work on a limited number of files, but they were essentially Aboriginal rights and title litigation. Because I worked on the Sparrow case. And because of that experience, I was able to work on the case that went eventually to the Supreme Court of Canada and establish that there was such a thing as, Aboriginal rights and title in British Columbia. So, that experience to me was invaluable in the sense that even though I left Davis and Company after that and went to McCarthy's, where I actually did focus totally on business or commercial law, my background of doing both litigation and solicitors work was what landed me a job at BC Gas at the time, because they wanted, as in-house counsel, they wanted somebody who was capable of doing both. And in particular, my boss at the time wanted me to take on the regulatory hearings, right, and being able to appear before the National Energy Board and the BC Utilities Commission as counsel, as well as doing the solicitor's work, right, that all companies have. Yeah, and because I was able to do both, that was how I got that position. That flexibility is incredible if you're able to do it.
You mentioned some of the positions that you've held in that answer. More recently, you've also served as in-house counsel at TimberWest and IntraWest, and most recently as you've been deputy chair at the BC Utilities Commission. strikes me that this is a slightly different career path than maybe what a lot of law students think that their degree will lead to. So I'm just wondering if you can describe how you ended up in that direction and what your work looks like now.
I, like most students, right, you start out thinking, oh, I have to article in a big firm so I get the good experience and good training, which is all true. But you realize that the private practice of law can be a grind. It's very stressful. It demands a lot of your time and your energy. And I think eventually, you know, some of us kind of decide that there has to be a better way, a better balance, right, of between work and life and, you know, your friends and family. So that's why I decided to go in-house by taking a job at BC Gas. And I love being in-house counsel. I was there for actually 15 years before I went to IntraWest. And the reason I went to IntraWest was because my former boss took over as head of legal there and was encouraged to start a department at the company. And he basically invited me to join him there. And we worked very well together. So I agreed to go to IntraWest. And at the time when they actually got the Olympics, right, in Vancouver. So it was great. That was the enticement I needed in order to join him at IntraWest. I also got to work for Tremblant because I'm bilingual. And so that was the other reason I went there as well, to do the legal work for Tremblant. And then after that, I went to TimberWest as the first ever in-house counsel there and learned all about the forestry industry. And then I left IntraWest, but then joined the BC Utilities Commission as a commissioner. And the reason I got that was because of my experience at BC Gas, right, doing regulatory work. So, you know, there's sometimes, you know, things happen for a reason. And what you, the choices you make early on can, you know, also carry over, in my case, to my new position. The reason, as I said, that I joined the Utilities Commission was because of my background, having done a regulatory hearings, right, before the commission, as well as the National Energy Board, which I'm now able to kind of capitalize on in my current position as deputy chair.
I've spoken to a few people from your graduating class, actually, and they've all talked about the Stephen Volrich Memorial Bursary. I noticed on the website that your name is on it as well. And so I was wondering if you can tell me a little bit about your role when it comes to the bursary and why you felt it was important to be a part of it.
Well, you know, Stephen was tragically died before he actually finished law school. And, you know, a group of classmates at the time that knew him and were quite close to him because they were in the same small group together, decided that we should do something to honor his memory, right? So we created the bursary, and obviously as new law students at the time without much prospect of a job, it never really took off until such time as we, you know, all became lawyers and actually had some money to contribute towards the bursary. But for our 30th anniversary, we actually made an effort to basically encourage our classmates, over 200 of them, to each contribute towards the bursary and make it meaningful. And a group of us, you know, took the initiative of donating, you know, at least $1,000 each to kind of kick it off as part of our class reunion. And it was actually quite successful. And as a result, we've now managed to increase the size of the bursary quite considerably, right? Mm. And anytime now that we are thinking about having another reunion, we always try to make that bursary part of our fundraising initiative as part of the reunion, just to honor, as I said, you know, a classmate who passed away much too early. It contributes to students, right? Law school, frankly, is expensive nowadays. Mm-hmm. And law school education is a huge investment. And sometimes some of the people are saddled with large loans if the families cannot afford to pay the tuition. And I think the bursary is just one way of alleviating that, right?
Yeah, definitely. That can be very helpful. Another side of your career has been your involvement in initiatives like the Continuing Legal Education Society of BC and the Legal Education and Action Fund. All of these revolve, broadly speaking, around this idea of legal education. And I'm wondering why you felt it was important to be part of initiatives like this in addition to simply practicing law.
I think, you know, maybe it's my parents who instilled in me the value of education, because they were teachers. And as I say, at one point in time, I even thought about going into teaching, right? It taught me that education is power. You know, it knowledge is power, and it allows you to frankly be open-minded if you know you are have an interest and curiosity in learning, right? And I think that's part of the kind of emphasis that I've placed in my life in trying to educate people about things, right? So that they learn to be balanced, they learn to think critically about things and to seek knowledge, all with a goal of trying to hopefully make a world a better place, right? And that's what I see the main role of education is. And I'm a huge believer in it. You know, I'm always trying to learn new things and I'm curious about new things. Right? I'm not always good at everything, but you know, I want to learn about it. And at least, you know, venture into areas that perhaps I may not be an expert about, but it grows me as a person to understand different things beyond just, you know, being a lawyer.
Yeah. Somewhat relatedly, you're also a member of the Dean's Advisory Committee for the Center for Business Law at UBC. I was hoping you can elaborate a little bit on what this role entails and how you came to be involved in it.
Well, I came to be involved in it because Dean Bobinski twisted my arm to join the advisory committee when she first formed it, because she had a vision of you know the Center for Business Law as being you know a new part of the law school, which emphasized not so much you know litigation, because as a law student you learn so much about you know substantive law, case law, common law, but you know law school doesn't teach you how to practice law. Nor does it emphasize, frankly, business law in particular, right? So for people who may be inclined to become solicitors, law school doesn't necessarily provide very good training, you know? And I think Dean Bobinski saw that that was a deficit for a large group of people who may end up being solicitors, because not everyone can be a litigator, nor should they be, right? So she, as I said, had this vision that we should be giving some airtime and some better experience in business law to people who may be interested in practicing it when they leave law school. And so she approached me to join the Council of Lawyers to basically think about things that a type of program that we can offer students who may be interested in practicing as a solicitor. So I was with the council for well until this year when I said to them, look, I've been on this committee since the inception. I think it's time for you to get, you know, new blood, have somebody else come and take my place. So I've stepped off it since. But I think it's important, as I said, for law school to always be looking beyond what the current curriculum is and think about new things, right, that they can offer students more choice in what courses they can take, and you know the type of experiential learning that I think is becoming more prevalent nowadays.
Yeah, you're someone who's clearly remained involved with the Allard School of Law and with legal education more broadly. And you kind of just hinted at this, but I'm wondering how you've seen legal education change since your time as a student and maybe where you'd like to see it go next.
That's a very good question. When I went to law school, it was essentially very, if I can put it this way, old school, in the sense it was very, you know, big hall lectures with the professor standing at the front of the room, you know, telling you about case law, right? And the choice offerings in terms of choices of courses was not terribly diverse, let me put it this way. Whereas I think nowadays, I think particularly at UBC, I think the curriculum is getting better. Students have way more choice, I think. In terms of what they can choose from, in terms of courses, and even in terms of you know going abroad and get credit for it in at different law schools, and those opportunities are more there. And as well, the clinical programs have expanded. When I went to law school, the only program was LSLAP, right? And it's still there, but nowadays you've got you know the Innocence Project, you've got the Indigenous Legal Clinic, you've got the business law externship, you know, all those programs are available to you now. So I think it provides students with a greater choice and frankly, as I said, a broader view, right, than what we used to get in law school. Now, that being said, I'm still a huge believer that law school is not a trade school. it's a professional school, and it's designed to teach you not so much how to practice law, but really to develop the skills that you need to analyze issues in a and think about things in a rational, logical manner, and to apply the law. Right? And that, I think, should remain its main goal. At the same time, I think you do need to kind of, you know, move on with the times and respond to what students want in terms of new experiences, more practical hands-on opportunities, and ability to, you know, connect with the legal community out there, which frankly was not very readily available when I went through law school. You know, we never had professors from downtown, you know, coming in and teaching classes, for instance, which you see a lot of nowadays, right? The adjunct professors that are drawn from the legal community. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's definitely going more in that direction, I'd say, yeah.
Yeah.
Another part of your very varied career that we've talked about has been serving as president of the Law Society of BC and national director of the Canadian Bar Association. I'm just hoping you can tell me a little bit about what inspired you to become involved in basically the regulation of our profession, and what you think lawyers who do something like that learn from that experience that might not be obvious to those who are just practicing law.
The Canadian Bar Association is actually interesting body because it actually is almost like the union for lawyers, right? Mm-hmm. It's the group that lobbies and advocates for lawyers' interests, and they represent the members' interests. In contrast, the Law Society is actually, as you mentioned, the regulator. The Law Society actually is there to serve the public interest, not lawyers' interests. And I think sometimes people don't realize that. They think that, you know, the Law Society is there to protect lawyers. In fact, it's exactly the opposite. The Law Society is there to protect the client's interests. That's where the Law Society does things like, for instance, set out very clear conflict of interest rules for lawyers that have to obey them. And in fact, the Law Society actually disciplines lawyers, right? Who, for instance, steal money from their clients' trust accounts or does something that's unethical. So it's the professional regulatory arm, and whereas the Canadian Bar Association is actually the members' organization. But, you know, having served on both, I think each of them has their uses. And what I would say you learn from serving in either one of them is just that overall, the legal profession is highly varied. And at the same time, it's actually very collegial. I think most lawyers are actually very, very good, ethical, professional people, and who are trying to, by and large, advance their clients' interests as opposed to their own. So what participating in those organizations provided me with is just an understanding of how people practice law in a different setting other than what I know, which is, you know, the big firm, big company settings, right? And I got to know people who practice law up, you know, up in Dawson Creek, Williams Lake, you know, and understand what their problems are and what their clients' needs are in those areas. And that opens your eyes, right, to different practice areas, different concerns, different needs, so that we don't apply a one-size-fits-all kind of lens to the problems that we have in terms of solving for the legal profession or for clients in general. Like conflicts of interest rules can be very difficult to manage in a small community where you may have one or two lawyers, right? How do you avoid conflicts of interest when really your choices are very limited, right? You force somebody to go to the only other lawyer in town, mm-hmm. just so you don't have a conflict of issue. So you need to kind of think about things like that when you're crafting rules.
As you know, the law school and the transition into the legal profession can be daunting and stressful, and often students are looking up to people for advice and mentorship. As someone who's navigated this process with success, I'm wondering what your advice would be to current law students.
One thing I will say is that the practice of law is very demanding, and it's not for everyone. You know, and so you have to examine what your motivations are for going to law school and what you're hoping to get out of it. Because if the desire is for you to, you know, make money and make a lot of money, probably the wrong motivation for you to go to law school. Because the reality is that I used to joke that, you know, as an auditing student, I could make more money being the, you know, checkout girl at Safeway than I did in auditing, because you work so many hours, right? And you work day and night when you're auditing, that if you want to assess your ability to, as I said, to make money, you could have all kinds of jobs that would be much more financially rewarding. But that being said, I think being a lawyer has a lot of really good advantages that people don't think about. That is that I say that I get paid to think every minute of the day. I mean, seriously, that's what I'm being paid to do, and to problem solve, right? And to help people with their legal problems, right? For those who cannot navigate the legal system on their own. And it's all about being, as I say, a problem solver, except the problems that we're being asked to solve are legal ones, right? So to me, that's intellectually interesting. It makes me feel good because when I'm able to help people. And it's intellectually interesting, as well as you're dealing with people all the time. You're not sitting in front of a computer doing something that's abstract. You're actually applying your legal knowledge to help people solve day-to-day problems. And I find that really, really rewarding. That being said, I think you all have to be flexible as you become a lawyer and be willing to do things that perhaps you feel initially uncomfortable, because law doesn't have certainty. Law is not black and white. Law is actually all shades of gray. I always say that there's no perfect answer in law, right? It's all based on, the level of risk and tolerance that you have, right? About uncertainty. And it's open to interpretation, which is the good and bad thing about it when you're a lawyer, right? Because even if, if an answer, if something appears to head towards a certain result from a legal interpretation perspective, there's always some other facts that sometimes come into play that will take you in a different direction. So law actually allows for creativity in terms of our own interpretation and the perspective you bring to it. I really like that. That being said, I think law can also demand a lot of your time, and it can make you, frankly, a lot of lawyers are workaholics because we tend to be kind of perfectionists and we like to get it right. And sometimes we can, in that process, we can spend way too much time at our jobs rather than on the people around us who have family and friends that we should be devoting time to. And, as one of my mentors told me early on in my career, when I was working way too much, he says, "Anna, is it, the law firm's not coming to your funeral, I just thought, well, it was a strange thing for you to tell me. Like, I'm only like, 30 something, right? And for you to think about my funeral." But his point to me was, you really gotta stop this, right? Because it's not a healthy thing for you to be spending all your time at work. And when your only friends are the people around you at work, right? And you're not spending time with your family, and nor are you looking out for your own health and interests and going, going for a bike ride or whatever. So I took that advice actually, and that's part of the reason I think that I moved away from the big firm environment. It was just eating up a lot of my life.
Do you think there's been a shift generally towards a bit more of a work-life balance for people in the field?
I think it depends on the environment you're in. I think if you're going to go to a big firm, there will be the expectation that you're going to spend a lot of time working for the firm. Because a big firm costs money, right? And the nice offices and the benefits that come from working in a big firm are not free, right? They require a certain level of sustainment. But I think in terms of culture, I think the younger generation are much smarter than we were, in the sense that I think they have a better sense of value, maybe because their parents were workaholics, right? And they saw the negative in that, right? That they're, I think, much more willing to say, no, I'm not going to spend all my life, at the firm, right? My kids are important to me. My spouses are important to me. My pets are more important to me. They need to see me, right? And so I think the younger generation has a better, as I say, perspective and balance than we did. And so hopefully that may result in a culture change within the profession, but it's still demanding. There's no question about it. It's not a 9-to-5 job. And if that's what you want, then, frankly, probably practice laws is not really for you. Oh, obviously, if you manage your own firm, you can make the rules, right? But if we're just, associate in a big firm, it's hard to think that the culture would necessarily shift. tremendously in their ways.
We've talked about several of the things that you've done during your career. Is there anything coming up in your future in terms of new roles or new projects that you're excited about and would like to share?
You know, I'm not one of those people that have five-year plans. I'm a huge believer in making the best of what you have currently and trying to learn something from it and then learn from your own mistakes and then move on, right? I have, you know, always taken the view that things happen for a reason. So I don't plan to, you know, I don't have any huge initiatives and goals going forward, nor do I have big projects like, you know, desire to write a book or anything, because, you know, everybody thinks, especially lawyers think that, you know, all of us are authors and writers, and frankly, a lot of us are not. So I don't have any of those desires, but, you know, I'm open to adventures, I'm open to learning, and I'm open to taking on new tasks and roles when it's offered to me. So I think that's one of the things that I have learned over the years, that, you know, if opportunities are handed to you and you're asked to do something and you think that you can contribute, you should say yes, because, you know, you'll learn something from it and you'll meet some great people along the way. And that's why I would say to every person who becomes a lawyer, if you ask to do something and you actually think you can contribute, do it, you know, because you'll reap the rewards that you will reap from it are way greater than the efforts that you're going to put into it.
Thank you so much for taking the time to do this again.
No problem. Pleasure. Thank you very much, Dario. Yeah.